Hello there. You are listening to Lady Radio, broadcasting live from the unceded territory of the Musqueam peoples. Lady Radio is sponsored by UBC Women's Center, whose AGM is coming up. So we'll be posting about that on our Facebook soon. Today, we're talking about body image, starting with an interview with Alexa Mazzarello, photographer and coordinator of the Body Thoughts Project, and followed by a roundtable discussion about body image. But before that, we're going to start you off with a little bit of horsepower. This is Hi Everybody on CITR 101.9.
I don't know you, you don't know me.
You wanna know me?
Hi everybody, let's meet. I don't know you, you don't know me.
Hi everybody,
let's meet.
Pick me up in a Pontiac. Riddle me, that is a riddle and good. Put you on point like the doctor said it would. Are you ready for the ride? Are you down for the ride? Be there in 5. Text you when I come outside.
Ruskies, climate change activist and science historian, is at the Vogue Theater on Tuesday, April 5th at 7:30 p.m. Ruskies is the co-author of Merchants of Doubt, a book addressing the wealth of credible scientists who have clouded public understanding of scientific facts to advance political and economic interests. Tickets are free but must be reserved and are in limited supply. Visit pwias.ubc.ca.
Hempology 101 is a student-run organization here to educate the public about the benefits of hemp and cannabis. Fast fact! Hemp is a renewable, sustainable source of food and fiber. Fast fact! Your body contains anandamide, which is part of the same family of substances as THC. To learn more, look us up on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/Hempology101UBC. Or come to one of our great events. And don't forget, legalization through education.
Right, welcome back to Lady Radio on CITR 101.9. That was Hi Everybody by Horsepower. Horsepower.
Well, now we have an interview with Alexa Mazzarello, photographer and coordinator of Body Thoughts, conducted by Lady Radio. Radioer Amna Elnor.
That's a word I made up.
Body Thoughts is an art pop-up experience that creates a unique space for honest conversation about our bodies.
Hey, this is Lady Radio. I'm Amna, and today I'm interviewing Alexa Mazzarello. Did I say that right? All right. In her beautiful home. She's been so kind as to welcome me here. So before we dive in, I'm going to let Alexa tell us a little bit about herself and about this installation she's doing called Body Thoughts.
Cool. Do you want me to hold this?
Okay.
Hi, Lady Radio. It's nice to be here. My name's Alexa Mazzarello, and I am a photographer and artist and entrepreneur. And I have founded something, co-founded something called Body Thoughts, which started in Vancouver, and we just wrapped up our second show in Toronto. Yeah, and I'm back now.
Nice. So, Body Thoughts, you're a photographer, and you used to be a wedding photographer. And in Body Thoughts, you took the camera and you did some self-portraits of yourself naked. And so as far as I have seen from online, the installation is these photos that you've selected, put up in this room, and people come and look at it and they kind of reflect on their own body. So I guess, what was that experience like, first of all? And like, what was the selection process and the editing like, you know, because it seems like, you know, obviously vulnerable, but at the same time, it was a kind of about these insecurities that women have in front of the camera.
Yeah, I mean, so I wouldn't classify myself as a wedding photographer. I have shot weddings, shooting. No, it's okay. People, I think, like, we want to categorize, and natural, but I wouldn't say I'm a wedding photographer. However, mm-hmm. I have shot many weddings, mm-hmm. and this thing that I've put together called Body Thoughts is a direct kind of response to what I heard, not only from brides, but spending so much time with women in front of my camera doing portraits. I also have worked with a lot of dancers, which is, you know, a very body conscious industry. So for myself, I had collaborated with another artist in Vancouver in July, and she approached me and wanted to do a collaboration. And so I asked her about her art and her practice. So she mostly does sketch art, and she does charcoal, and she does these like kind of animated versions of women, and she does it for women who are nude. And I asked her why, and she told me her story and how she's battled anorexia for many years. And so I said, okay, so I pitched her the idea of posing for me in front of my camera and in her healthy body, in her recovered body, to reclaim her voice. So this was a very important message for her. Mm-hmm. And when we put the show together in July, I felt a kind of palpable energy that I hadn't necessarily felt before. And I realized that we had struck a chord with a lot of people where there was no platform to talk about this in a way that was safe and empowering and maybe different than what we're hearing in,
which is like, so love odd, your bo- I think,
love
you know?
Your body, like, I'm beautiful. It's like, fuck that. I don't want to talk about
sometimes,
that.
Sometimes,
I want to talk about the larger context and what's going on and what is feeding this system that's causing this. So within that collaboration, I also was limited in what I could say because it was not my body and it was not my pictures. And my background, I have a master's in public health. I am always trying to understand the world from this lens of well-being. And I realized that I felt limited because it wasn't my story. And it wasn't the thing that I really wanted to talk about. I think talking about eating disorders and talking about your stories, it's cathartic, it's important, but that wasn't my story. And I wanted to have an impact on the larger conversation. So I took some time away after that initial show, and I realized that I was going to have to step in front of my own camera. Like, there was no way around it for me. I had to do this. Nobody was going to tell my story or know what I had to say. And that's kind of how it started it all. How does that feel? Like, nothing could have prepared me for what it feels like, I think.
Yeah, because you're, like, inspecting yourself, kind of, you know? And it's just, it's different from looking in a mirror because it's through, you're kind of separated it from it more, like through these layers of the camera and then the image in the computer and all these things, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, I've had people say, wow, I could never do what you did. Like, my body on the wall, I don't feel anything. I don't feel scared that people are looking at my nipple or looking at my rolls. I don't feel anything like that. I feel, where I feel vulnerable is in how exposed I am, because there's an audio portion of the show where It's a 45-minute, it's edited down from like a 3-hour interview that we did 2 hours after I shot myself for the first time.
Okay, so it was like right after.
Okay. And, you know, I think a lot of the emotion that went into it, it's really interesting to think about what stepping into this work has done for like my larger life. But mm-hmm. I was in this really weird kind of relationship with this guy. Mm-hmm. And having the show and like putting myself on the line made me realize like all of the shit that I was putting up with. And I'm not like man shaming. I'm just saying this is like my
personal relationship.
This is what I it forced me.
Yeah.
It forced me out of it, and it forced me back to somebody who has been there all along, and I just hadn't noticed. So I think that speaks to when you're being really, really honest with yourself. Yeah. I had to like really get
confront
in integrity
tears, yeah.
in my other areas of life. So there was like a larger, and I when I listened to, I haven't actually listened to the full 45 minutes since like last year.
Really? Even so when you put on the installation, you just did it in Toronto for our listeners who don't know, but yeah, even then you didn't listen to it, I think.
I'll listen to pieces. Mm-hmm. It's really hard.
Yeah.
Because I know what.
Yeah, hearing your own thoughts, I think, in a way. It's funny that you say that, you know, looking at your body on the wall, that's not what you're scared of. And you really shouldn't be. It's kind of, it's, I don't know, the way I think of it is it's just kind of like this box you're in and then it's over, right?
Yeah.
And you shouldn't have all these thoughts about, you know, it's just kind of like a nice mm-hmm. purge. But like hearing your own thoughts and how, the things that go on in your head all the time that nobody else is really hearing, and these conversations you were saying that we don't want to have, where like self-love is supposed to be hard, it's even harder to talk about, you know, maybe the negative thoughts, like what is that, I guess, how do you think that speaks to like the mind body relationship? That's a really broad question, but
can you say the question again?
I mean, I guess, what do you think that says about the mind body relationship for you? Like, I guess mm-hmm. for me, when mm-hmm. I think about it, I think about the ways that our thoughts affect our body and our health, and in turn, like our health and our body affects the way we think. So maybe like, how does that process of, you know, doing an audio portion and then exposing that to people, like what is, you said it made you realize all these things about yourself. What did you get out of that, I guess, mm-hmm. in that, between that relationship?
It's a weird question. Mm-hmm. No, it's okay. So I think to address like the mind-body balance, I think it's a battle. I think our minds are balancing with our bodies, and our bodies are, and our mind and our brain is the most powerful thing. I know when I'm in a positive headspace, and I was just saying last night to my partner, boyfriend, partner, whatever, I was like, it's so nice having you back in my life because I feel like I have this kind of stability and this like, this bed of love that is unconditional, that I know like we can work through a lot of things. And choosing to invest in that relationship came out of this.
Like the honesty.
Yeah, honesty. That makes sense. And getting really clear with myself about how I was being in the world, and how I was engaging in relationships with men in like this really confusing time in our 20s when mm-hmm. we're like, what the fuck is going on? And it's just so, and I think it's really confusing for women right now, and it's really confusing for men. I feel so much compassion for what men are dealing with, because I think honestly women are doing, we're talking about it, there's an uprising, we're rising unstoppably.
We kind of have these tools to communicate that it seems like men are not socialized to have as much as us, or like these networks that we're okay with having. We feel like we can be sensitive, I feel, mm-hmm. in a way, around certain people.
Well, yeah, like we're socialized to talk about things. We're socialized. And then I think men are, and I'm experiencing this in my relationship, where it's like, he's trying to figure out, how do I be a man? How do I be your man or the man? What does that even...
what does that mean?
What does that mean now? Because when I'm out in the world doing my work, I'm dominant and in control, and I'm the leader and all these things. And then in my relationship, it's a partnership. And I have to actually be softer and be more compassionate and think about how he feels. Not that I'm not doing that in my work, but it's like, it is a very confusing time, I think. And I talk to a lot of my girlfriends who are in relationships or married. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I feel more compassion for men.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's really interesting.
And I think we have a long way to go to involve men in this conversation. Because, mm-hmm. like, we're not going to get anywhere without them.
They're, like, half the world. They're
the best, you know? Like, I think about my brother, and I think about my dad, and I think about my partner, and, like, their love is really the thing that has gotten me here. And I think we have a lot of work to do to continue including them in the conversation. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Really important. So I went on a totally different tangent.
No, but that's good. That's good. Whatever. It's just conversation, yeah. Right? Yeah. That's all good to know. It's all related too. Mm-hmm. So I guess going back to the installation, mm-hmm. What kind of reactions have you gotten? And especially from men, because I can mm-hmm. kind of imagine, you know, for me, when I was looking at the work, it was neat to see someone, especially, you know, obviously, like, I'm not trying to take away from the courage it takes to do it, but it's really, like, I look at your body and it's really great. Like, you're hot. Like, it's, I would, like, not be embarrassed at all to show that off. So looking at it, it's comforting in a different way to see someone like that and realize they had trouble doing that and, you know, we're able to, like, plaster it all over this building that people are stepping into and are going to be contained in, you know, so... What kind of reactions have you gotten, and especially for men, like what kind of, I guess you wouldn't know because the thoughts are anonymous, right? Or no, are they not? No, okay. Yeah.
And people, like, we have a huge emphasis on dialogue in the space, mm-hmm. and I'm there every night. So I talk to a lot of people. So I think the first thing to address is what you said about, oh, like, you know, I look at your body and it's like, you're hot, like you're doing okay. This is a really interesting thing. And I've had comments like that from a lot of girls who have come in, who have said, thank you for doing this because it's relatable for me. And it's relatable in the sense that, like, all, you know, these are average girls. Mm-hmm. Maybe, like, you know, I'm 5'4". I don't know how much I weigh because I haven't weighed myself in forever. But, like, I just don't do it because it doesn't really mean anything to me. But, I think to have a story that is not legitimized by this massive trauma or crisis or, like, you know, I grew up privileged. I went to university. I have a master's degree. I know all these things and I've been criticized for it. Like, oh, another white girl telling her story. But I think it's what, just because that was my background, I'm not allowed to talk about something that I think is important. I feel a responsibility to speak up and in an authentic way. And I'm not discrediting everything else. But when I look at the cover of a magazine and there's a woman on there who is plus size or whatever, like, I can't relate to that. That's just not my body. I'm kind of short and kind of small. But I have insecurities too. And they're the same as hers.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And so I've had a lot of women and girls say, thank you. Cause it's really nice. It's nice to hear, you know, this maybe more average girl or whatever. From men are the best. Men are like, I love hearing their reactions. Some of them are, a lot of them will start to talk about their own insecurities.
Okay.
Like, they'll start opening up, and we've had so many conversations, like, much longer with men than with women, because they've never, a lot of them have not experienced a platform where it's really safe to speak. And it's really safe to, like, they actually soften, they open up. And, you know, this is the thing about vulnerability. It's an access point. Like, the second somebody is vulnerable first,
it makes it
the
okay
other person. For you to know. And so we've had these, like, amazing conversations with men where they tell us all about how hard it is for them and, or what this has made them think about for their girlfriend or their mom or their sisters. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's just like, that's the unifying conversation about everybody just kind of starting to get related in a way that, like, what and I say this all the time, the body thought space is inherently neutral. Mm-hmm. It's neutral. Everyone is welcome. I want everybody to feel like they can participate in the conversation.
Okay. So what kind of things, I guess, did you do to make the space function that way? You had your first installation here in Vancouver, right? Mm-hmm. And then you went to Toronto. Mm-hmm. And did you have any connections there? Or did you just kind of go and decide, I'm going to do Body Thoughts in Toronto? Like, how did that go?
So I kind of just decided I was going to go do Body Thoughts in Toronto.
Nice.
It went well here, and I knew that there was an energy that was, like, really special. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go test it in a different market, and I wanted to test it in the biggest market in Canada and the market that is responsible for a lot of what we consume in terms of media.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I wanted to go to, like, the heart of industry. And what was so cool is our space that we took over was actually right on King West, and there is TSN across the street. There's CBC behind us. There's TIFF Lightbox right down
really
the street.
Really in the heart of it. Okay.
Literally implanted this little conversation in this, like, massive context. Mm-hmm. And I ended up getting on CBC.
Nice.
They, like, heard about us. And that was, you know, really... That was a highlight for sure. I think that... Okay, so the question was, how do we make it like a neutral space, and how did we do it?
Like, I saw it wasn't a typical white cube gallery, but yeah, it was still neutral, and it looked like you had some, like, lights kind of shining on the photos, and I guess just what kind of compositional, you know, aspects did you have in mind when you're trying to create this conversation space?
So there's a couple things that are really critical to the Body Thoughts experience that have been designed on purpose from my own experience when I've been to things and haven't felt welcome. So first of all, I have a whole team there who staffs the Body Thought space, and their only job is to hold space for other people. So
what that means is
so I'm also trained as a yoga teacher, and when we hold space for other people, it really means that your sole responsibility, so if I'm teaching a yoga class, my sole responsibility is to guide people through a practice, but let the practice be theirs. And so in that same way, when I when I'm coaching my team at the beginning of the show, it's really an emphasis on, like, you're not your opinions when you're in this space. Let all of that go and be really open and really welcoming and really loving towards everybody who comes in here, and you'll be amazed at the kind of conversation that happens when you come from that place. So I bring in influencers also from the community, so people who are bloggers, who are invested in the conversation, who I feel aligned with, and we usually meet them before. We also have questions that we give people at the beginning of the experience. So this question, this card with a question on it, immediately makes the experience about that person. And we also give them a card that has space for them to write down their own thoughts. And then there's a whole team walking around, and it's really beautiful, warm, inviting experience. Most of that is designed through people. People are critical, because I can have a space that looks a certain way and is inviting and inclusive. And, you know, we have the 6 photographs on the wall, and then the seating is all in the middle, so it's communal seating. So you might be sitting beside somebody that you just met. But a lot of this is designed through people.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I had no idea, actually. Did not know.
So it's all, it's very, very, very people focused. And things that we did in Toronto to, for example, we met, like, so many people. I've had so many meetings at Soho House. Like, come, do you know Soho House? It's like a members only club, and it's like for creatives and professionals. Anyways, it's, and so many people would be like, are you going to do a VIP event? Is there going to be an opening? And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, this is not, like, A, I'm not a VIP, like, I don't know what that is. And this is an inherently neutral space. And so, no, I won't do that. We're going to stay really true to who we are. And a lot of people were like, you know, it would be really good for press. It would be really good, blah, blah, blah. So we make sometimes hard decisions that will have us be maybe not as exposed, but the thing is, because it's so authentic, like, people pay attention when you're doing good work.
That's really interesting, because I feel the same way, kind of, when I enter certain art spaces. You know, you might feel like, I definitely feel less, I guess, able to share my thoughts. So it's interesting that you chose to do it at this totally blank canvas type of space. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea that you had people, you know, specifically there to make it function as a safe space totally. For dialogue. So that's really neat. Do you feel like you want to keep it that way in the future and kind of, you know, take over new spaces? You're trying to move it, I think, to do an installation in San Francisco, mm-hmm. I read. Yeah.
We were invited to participate in San Francisco. So nice. I've
congrats.
Thank
that's
you.
Exciting.
Thanks. I've actually postponed it mm-hmm. because I'm so tired.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It takes a lot of energy, I think, to facilitate something like
it
that.
Takes a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. It is like I'm not when I mean we're at the point right now where body thoughts as a thing. We understand that there's a lot of impact and we really can feel that. We have data, we're measuring things, mm-hmm. and at the same time, with what it is right now, we can't scale it, meaning we can't continue to fund it personally to travel mm-hmm. around. So we're taking a step back, and I'm working with an amazing like startup guru in San Francisco who's my friend to scope out what the next 6 months looks like. So I'm really also looking at it as a business mm-hmm. and making it, you know, how can this be, you know, it's a mission driven business, yeah. but how can we continue to survive? So San Francisco will be in the future, and the design of the, like the heart and soul of Body Thoughts will always be the experience
people, yeah.
and it will always be designed with a focus on people. So yeah, it will always involve people who staff the space, and there are ambassadors.
Yeah, I feel like that kind of restraint is important when mm-hmm. you're, especially in these kind of earlier steps, when you have an idea and you see it working, but you don't want to, you know, compromise the integrity of the project. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that I can imagine that'd be hard to do, to step back, but also, you yeah. know, important for the mission itself.
And it's important for my sanity.
Yeah,
for my sanity and for my relationships.
Can't do work without you, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's good. It seems like you're living pretty healthy.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So it seems like, I mean, you were talking about how doing Body Thoughts made you step back and re-examine some of your relationships in a way that you weren't expecting it to, I don't think. I mean, art can be, you know, making art can be pretty healing mm-hmm. for people. And it's interesting how you were saying you had to kind of turn it towards yourself to have that experience. You also do, I saw you went into some schools and you worked with younger girls. So I guess what are you trying to do with that? And like, how do you try to transfer that healing, you know, power of what this experience has given you, you know, in the work that you do?
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I think that every artist has a different method.
Yeah. Totally.
For myself, it's always been about, like opening up mm-hmm. more and more and more and more to the point where like, then I was just naked and it was just my body. And that's my process, and it's cathartic for me in that way. And mm-hmm. I feel more authentic doing it that way. That's mm-hmm. not, you know, that's not going to be everybody's process. And I think it takes, you know, when I spoke at the high school in Whistler, I spoke to grade 9 students three separate times. And I would, you know, I didn't show them the photos. So we had like a, you know, I made it neutral for them and like approachable for them.
Yeah.
But I also talked to them about what I did. Mm-hmm. And I talked to them about integrity and the kind of integrity it takes to do this kind of work and do it well and do it where there's authenticity through and through, when you're not doing it because like you want attention, but you're doing it because like there's something really important to be said. And I think that always speaks to them. Like I love talking to the generation that is like coming up, because it's just so important that, you know, I'm not saying to every girl, okay, now go take pictures of yourself and do this. It's like, no, you're going to find your way to make a difference in the way that you want.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just what I've chosen. And I have, you know, specific measures. I mean, really, like the largest goal, the goal for all of it is to close the gender gap. Like that's, you know, it's just equality, yes, it's feminism, but it's just like,
yeah,
we're all kind of, I know so many women who are doing and aiming for this one thing in different ways. This is just how I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And it'll evolve as I evolve.
Totally. Yeah. Makes sense. I mean, okay, so we have this like culture now with selfies. You were saying like, you know, you don't have to take a picture of yourself and be like, I'm great. You were saying in the schools, but I don't know. You kind of alluded to this a bit earlier. There's that double standard where you're not supposed to, yeah, be looking at yourself sometimes and enjoying that either. Like there is this expectation for self-love, but at the same time, there's this like double standard that exists where women are supposed to be, you know, you're supposed to look good, you're supposed to be beautiful, you're expected to look a certain way. And then when you kind of turn that around and you take that power back for yourself and you kind of get enjoyment out of it, there's often like, you know, some kind of shaming to that. And it sounded like you had gotten also some criticism from people about the work you're doing. So, I mean, it seems like you think there's some value still though to be gotten from that. So what can you say about that and like the way that can be done in a way, I guess that's independent or, you know, just, yeah, you know, not really buying into that culture, but still getting something out of it. So, yeah, I'm not very good at phrasing this, but you know what I mean? Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's, I spoke to a woman yesterday, 2 days ago. She is doing research through photography in Iceland, which is the most equal country in the world in terms of gender equality. They feminized their financial system when they had a crash in 2008. And they, they were the fastest country to gain stability in their financial system after the crash. Compare that to the United States. Yeah. And, you know, so her work is incredible. She's been photographed, and I found it online. An article was posted and I emailed her right away and I was like, I have to speak to you. And we Skyped and she was just this like badass woman. She's 40. And, you know, when we talk about expectations of women, like, sure, there's expectations of women, but like, fuck that. Yeah. Who cares? Like, yeah, people expect me to do a lot of things.
Yeah.
I don't care. I want to do what I want to do. And I want to, you know, I don't need to like trample over other people to do what Alexa wants to do. I have a responsibility to like respect others and respect choices. But the more we continue to talk about expectations, the more we're distracted from the work that actually has to be done. And
I like that answer. It's like, well,
that's fuck what that. I feel. Yeah. Yeah, it's okay. Like, fuck the expectations. True. Who cares? This woman's living in Iceland. She's like, I was like, Gabrielle, you know, we were talking about children and having children and like this whole thing that I think a lot of women go through now of like, do I have a kid? Do I not have a kid? Do I wait? When is the right time? How do I choose a partner? Do I do it on my own? And she's like, I'm not going to have children probably because she's American. And she's like, you know, if I had lived in a society that supported me having a child more, yeah, I would have done that. But that wasn't, she's like, my work is more important than me being a mother. And I think that is such a brave thing to do. Yeah.
I just want to say thank you to all those women sometimes, yeah, you know?
Right? It's like, I'm talking, and it was so amazing because she was saying to me, she's like, you know, it's just so nice to talk to you. Mm-hmm. I'm 28. And I was like, it's really nice to talk to you because, like, I'm with somebody who really wants to have... He wants to have kids more than I want to have kids. I'm kind of like, hey, as long as possible that I can wait. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sacrificing my work.
Yeah.
And I'm not sacrificing what I can do in the world because I'm a mother. Like, and I still haven't figured out how it's going to be possible. But, you know, that's kind of what I thought about when you mentioned expectations.
It's, yeah, like, no, that's the expectations. Like a perfect answer. Yeah, mm-hmm. When it comes to those kinds of things, why should it be about finding a balance and compromising for that? You know, once you say fuck the expectations, it seems like everyone else kind of has to, you know, accommodate that. And that makes way more sense if you're trying to be true to yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. Okay, so, and then is there anything else you wanted our listeners to know? Where can they follow you online and all that?
Cool, yeah. So we are in the process of, we're kind of in a holding pattern. We're doing a lot of work right now to get our website kind of redesigned to suit our longer term needs. But please visit us at body-or-thoughts.com. Sign up for our newsletter. That's where you can stay in touch and know what we're up to. Erica and I, so I have a co-founder, Erica McDonald, and I are both here in Vancouver, and I'm hoping to do like a mini show in the next, you know, couple months and potentially through the summer. So please stay in touch, and I would love to meet more of your listeners. I know that some of the women came out to our show in Vancouver, and it was just so awesome to meet you guys. So yeah, body-thoughts.com.
All right. Thanks a lot, Alexa.
Thank you.
Saskatoon singer-songwriter Jen Lane has just released her new album, This Life of Mine, and you're invited to help celebrate. It's been hard moving on. Produced by Vancouver's own, the critically acclaimed John MacArthur Ellis, the new record is a testament to songcraft and the power of music. Spend an evening with Jen Lane on Friday, April 8th at 8 p.m. at Café du Soleil on Commercial Drive, and get a copy of This Life of Mine to take home with you. For advance tickets or to order the album, head on over to jenlane.com.
Tune in every Thursday from 11 p.m. till midnight for Copy and Paste with your host, Tim, a.k.a. Autonomy, the very best in underground dance music.
Thank you.
All right, welcome back to Lady Radio on CITR 101.9. That was Debauchery by Moo. You can check out the latest edition of Discorder magazine, where Lady Radio's own Claire Bailey interviews Moo about their new album, which that song was from. So now we're going to jump right into our chat about body image.
So this week and next, we're going to be talking about bodies. We'll be getting into the political talk next episode, but today we are focusing on body image. We're here today with Elizabeth, Rachel, Katie, Tintin, Callie, and myself, Cassandra. So first off, guys, at what age did you start becoming aware of your body image?
I think around like the beginning of high school, I got like super aware of it. Like, I think in middle school, like, you're always a little insecure about, you know, silly things that like really don't matter. But like in high school, I definitely got more aware of like my physical, like, you know, external image. I don't know, what are you guys?
Yeah, I distinctly remember being on the school bus when I was in like grade 6, and I remember like my breasts were budding. The best way to describe that.
I hate the word budding. Oh, God.
It's so good. And I remember being on the bus and just, like, looking down, and there were, like, little prisms, like, little triangular prisms. And I was like, I wonder what these are going to be like. And that, and yeah, that was definitely the first time that I was like, I guess I'm a lady.
I started early. I was like 8 years old when I had to go get, I went in for an ultrasound because we were all freaking out because I was so young and I, you know, got going.
How old were you?
8.
Okay.
So it was weird. And my mom was just like, what? Like, so surprised. She didn't even think that I could possibly be developing that early. So, school, like early school, it started to become like I was really aware of it because we weren't educated about it at all, about bodies. And actually, we weren't much after that anyway. But people definitely, you know, little kids just say silly things.
Yeah,
little kids are jerks. That's intense for such a young age, too. You have to deal with the whole, like, especially when you deal with people's like expectations of you all of a sudden. Like, there was definitely a key switch where, like, my body meant something to other people,
mm-hmm.
and in a negative way, where they're like, you need to start doing things to like cover, or like, this means, you know, it just like, it was, I remember the very distinct moment of being like, oh, do I need, what's wrong? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I feel like what I was going to say is that I felt like aware of my body probably like in middle school, but then I never really felt insecure about my body until I was like 19. And I remember, and it's kind of weird, but like, I don't know. I think like I used to be like 125 pounds, and then I never really thought about it. And then all of a sudden I like gained 10 pounds, and then I was like, nobody would even say anything to me, or it wasn't that like anybody treated me differently. But it's interesting how much like social images and like pressure, not even spoken, can just like seep in, and all of a sudden you're like, something feels like not the way it's supposed to be. Anyways.
Right. So Callie, you just talked about that sort of idea of non-verbal influence that you have, that that you've had on your body, and that sort of social image, right? And so this is a great segue, and my question would be, how have Eurocentric beauty ideals shaped the way you think about your body? And, you know, just to kind of give a little brief blurb about it, Eurocentric beauty ideals is a very sort of capital W Western problem, and essentially it's a focus on European features as the ideal standard of beauty. So sort of like having straight hair, double eyelids, having thin noses, having light skin. And women and men, but especially women, try to work to meet these standards through like skin lightening creams or like hair straightening tools or even plastic surgery. So how has that ideal affected the way that you look at your body?
I think like being a woman of color, it's always been like a huge challenge to like you know, unlearn these kinds of standards. Being introduced to them, like, I, you know, watching TV or something like as a kid, even like being exposed to, like, you know, white celebrities and stuff, and, like, not seeing people of your own race, like, particularly in, like, favorable lights, I guess, in media and stuff, it seemed a bit like, it was just, like, a huge microaggression that, like, is, like, there for, like, the rest of your life, kind of, until, like, anything, you know, changes in terms of media and what goes on television and stuff. But, yeah, it's just, it's hard to combat it because it's just impossible, or not impossible, but it's really difficult to unlearn considering, like, the cultural landscape that we live in right now. It's a little bit of a challenge.
And I think there's a weird, I mean, specifically talking about, like, skin lightening creams, there was a moment I had, like, maybe last year, I went to this giant Urban Outfitters in New York where they, like, brought in, they had this huge beauty section, and they brought in a lot of these, like, Korean beauty products, and they were like, we've got Korean beauty products, like, we're the best. I was like, okay, cool. Taking a look at these, and they had one or two skin lightening creams that they were selling at Urban Outfitters in, like, the middle of one of the, like, capitalist centers of North America, and I was just kind of standing there like, wow, okay, we're clearly not, like, looking at how messed up that is. That, like, first of all, this is, like, a product that we're selling as, like, a in-demand beauty thing. But then you're also, like, importing that and really not thinking about, like, what it is you're putting forward. I just found that so creepy. I still, like, it.
Yeah, you're, like, exoticizing it. Like, it's hip because it's exotic. And, like, that's kind of what they're trying to do. But they're not, they don't even have, like, the critical thinking process of that. So that's yeah. What, so make it's kind of just, like, a double annoyance and, like, not really cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me personally, the largest influence I had in my life in terms of a person who really reinforced Eurocentric beauty ideals was actually my mother. And she's in the beauty industry, so this is a really interesting conversation. So that's her job. So whenever I see her, she kind of goes like, boom, boom, boom. Acne, dark, too dark, body hair, gain weight. Like, that's kind of like the list off that I get. In the most sort of, I don't know how to say this. It's like not in an aggressive way, but it's just kind of part of who my mother is. And that was really difficult because, you know, for most people, I would hope is that your mother is this supportive figure of, you know, who you are as a person and this person who supports you. But for me, it was this constant struggle that I had where my mother told me I needed to look a certain way, and she also tried to work towards these things, so it wasn't just for me, it was for her as well. So she would tell me, oh, don't get too dark or you'll look like this, and oh, you're so pretty because you have double eyelids and you have such large eyes, just like a white person. So, you know, there were these kinds of conversations, and it was difficult, and it really, I'm still trying to unlearn those impressions that I have on my body. Yeah.
I think there's something interesting there that kind of ties into our next question, that idea of, like, the role models that we have, particularly, like, the female role models that teach us certain things about our body. Like, my mom was always very much, like, that supportive, like, you're beautiful, like, accept yourself, like, you're so great because of X, Y, Z. But the way she would talk about her own body was so negative. And the kinds of things she would say about herself that she'd be totally fine with, but I've started to learn as I've gotten older, I'll hear myself saying things where I'm like, oh, my mom used to say that about herself all the time, and she still does. And, like, no wonder I think about, not to blame my mom, but, you know, no wonder I'm thinking about things this way because that's the example that I've had, and that she's okay with talking about herself one way, but, like, wants me to be, like, encapsulating this whole, like, very empowered, like, self-love sort of thing. And the kind of double standards we have for the way we think about our own bodies and the way we want or like other people to think about their own bodies, or we think about other people's bodies, which kind of ties into like this next question that we had, which is how do we have conversations with ourselves around our bodies? Like, what kind of conversations are we having with ourselves, I guess, and like what do we want to do to change that? I don't know if you've
some of my thoughts on this have been about how, you know, when you compile all of the thoughts or things that you said outwardly about yourself that you've had in the past day or the past week or however long, if you compiled all of that dialogue, you know, what kind of conversation are you having with yourself and amongst others? So anyone want to jump into that?
I guess the way that I've been having that conversation with myself is, like, it's definitely changed lately. And, I mean, it's, like, a constant like, just, like, gotta lose weight or, like, be different or, like, just, it's always been there, like, since I was younger and struggled with eating disorders and stuff like that. And then lately I've gone through, like, a period of depression and it's kind of this magical thing that has happened, like, with just, I don't know, it's happened to me, but, like, I just, like, I don't have the energy to care at this point. And there's something so, like, I didn't even realize what kind of pressure it was putting on me until I just, like, couldn't care anymore. And then it wasn't there. I was, like, and I wake up in the morning, I have been lately, and I'm just, like, I'm good. Like, I'm putting on these pants that are probably, like, more sizes than I want them to be, and that is fucking great. No problem.
I think that the dialogue that, like, I would be having, like, if I ran over a dog, like, that I'd be having with myself for, like, the past couple of weeks, well, that was really, it would probably be, like, really up and down, because, like, some days I'll be, like, yeah, like, love myself, like, oh my god, I look great in these, like, ill-fitting jeans, yeah, hell yeah, and then, like, other times I'll just be, like, wow, like, what is wrong with me, like, I don't look, like, blah, 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 like, why can't I just look, like, you know, so-and-so, or, like, why can't I just, like, you know, lose a bit of weight, or, like, whatever. It really comes in, like, waves of, like, love and then, like, really just, like, negative thoughts that you have. It's just, like, actually kind of stressful because, like, you don't know, like, how you're going to feel on a certain day given, like, you know, given the day, you just don't know how you're going to view yourself. And it's kind of, like, stressful.
Yeah. There's this thing called Isabel Fox and Duke, and she sort of talks about, like, how to sort of get rid of, like, cyclical dieting and things like that. And I think a big thing is just, like, the conversation you're having with yourself is to be like, oh, I need to change. And if you can let go of that conversation, that's the biggest, like, just instead of being like, wait, I'm starting with this is what I am now. And I like that. And
yeah,
like, if you have actually, like, basically being like, okay, if I'm having really bad body image, I actually try to think about, like, wait, what's actually causing this bad body image? Because when I'm really happy, I think I look really beautiful. So, like, clearly, like, it kind of actually is sort of a blessing because it allows me to check in with myself and be like, wait, why is what's causing this behavior? Like, what's causing this mindset? You know what I mean?
This really makes me think about my own experience of coming into, like, I'm a huge body hair fan, but I wasn't. So for me, it was going through a period of depression, not having any responsibilities. I got to stay in PJs and could avoid the shower and, you know, no one complained but my family. So I just started, you know, I let go of shaving, and I was reading a lot of, you know, posts about body hair, or, you know, here and there. So I was trying to learn about it and learn about what people are doing with the movement. But I still felt so uncomfortable every time I went out everywhere. Like, I'd be looking at other people's eyes, watching them look at my legs. Yeah, it was definitely harder in a smaller, like, less diverse community. But what I said to myself was, like, I was uncomfortable with the fact that I felt uncomfortable with something that was so natural on my body. So I was like to myself, I am going to keep this until I can feel sexy as a hairy woman again. And that took months and months to really come into it. But one thing that really helped me was when I'd be facing more and more conversations where people would be kind of attacking me on it, and, you know, standing up for myself in that situation was definitely one of the things that kind of got me into that cradle of comfort with it.
Yeah, that's amazing. Unfortunately, I think that's all the time we have for today, which is a bummer that we have to, I mean, it's always a bummer that we have to leave it, especially since, like, even just, like, opening the doors of body hair, there's so much that we could talk about. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Next time. All the times. So just before we go, we have a couple events coming up this weekend that we think you should know about. So first off, Lotus Land. Lotus Land is a magazine focusing on exploring arts, music, and culture in Vancouver and beyond. They are having their first launch party tomorrow night at Untitled Art Space. There will be an art showcase that at this event, including the work of Lady Radioer Ivana Besanovsky. Yeah. Also, tomorrow night is the launch of Dagger Editions, presented with the Queer Arts Festival. Dagger Editions is Canada's newest literary imprint dedicated solely to the publication of queer women voices and all those who identify as such. The event will feature readings from some of the first authors on the imprint and a time for mingling. It is at Lost and Found Cafe in Gastown, starting at 7 p.m.
Thanks for joining us this week. Thanks to Alexa, Amna, everyone here in the studio, and all of you listening out there. Lady Radio is sponsored by UBC's Women's Center, and we will be back next week with more Body Talk. Stay tuned after this for UBC Insiders.
Just kidding. Actually, I forgot to take that out. There is no UBC Insiders.
Oh, my apologies.
My apologies. Just kidding. But stay tuned anyway.
Oh, April Fools.
We did it.
We've got a good... Dido, is it?
Yes.
Dido classic to play you out.
Happy Friday, everybody.
So bad, it's not so bad.